Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers produce over 600 varieties, types, and styles of cheese. That's twice as much as any other state. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome to HR and Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director here at HRN, and I'm here with Hannah Forden, our program manager.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We've got a really live audience here today because they're excited. We have a, like, if you could see what's happening in the studio right now, it's very exciting. There's a lot of very technologically advanced, very delicious things that will be happening.
There are tools on the table that I can't tell you what they are.
Couldn't possibly.
We'll take some photos and videos to make sure that you get to the full experience of what's happening here today, but you'll probably hear a lot of interesting sounds that you don't normally hear on Happy Hour. We're going to try some cocktails and some bites in just a second. I'm not going to spoil what it is. We'll get to it in a moment.
So excited.
Okay, but this will give you a hint because today's guests... Oh, wait, before we get to our guests, we have some other fun people in the studio. We have two of our new interns, Kevin and Nicole. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
And our engineer, Matt, is in the studio.
Hello.
Hi, Matt. Matt, make sure you sneak in here and get some things to try in a minute.
Oh, yeah. I was going to forget to do that.
Yeah. Our guests today are Miriam Hendricks, the master distiller for Ruta Gin. Correct me?
Perfectly said.
Oh, thank you. And she's also a food scientist. And we're going to get into what science-y cocktails we're going to have in just a moment. Our second guest is wearing a chainmail glove. And that's because he is the founder of New York Oyster Week. And he, yes, is going to do some shucking. His name is Kevin Joseph. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Kevin, really quick before we start, can you just kind of give us a like audio tableau of what you have going on here?
Yeah, what are we looking at?
Yeah, can we, and
this
we
is
can
very space age.
Instagram stories.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Well, what we have here is a cold smoker. I stole this from bartenders. Basically, it's a cold smoker, so it's a way in which I can cold smoke oysters.
Wow.
And we have some horseradish root, and we're about to have some wasabi root out, so I'm just trying to dig all this stuff out of my bags because we are launching New York Oyster Week tonight, and I have multiple toolkits here, as you can see. So
to describe what this looks like, the cold smoker is kind of a, it looks like it could be something for extracting one's brain in a sci-fi movie. It's sort of a clear dome with a pipe coming off of it that attaches to. What is this?
That's
this
a blowtorch.
Oh my goodness.
That's a blowtorch that lights it, and then this is a smoker that we use to light the wood on fire that fills that. The brain chamber, as I guess you would say, filled with smoke, which cold smokes the oysters.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to get more into that about what is Oyster Week, what's the occasion for today in just a moment. But first, Hannah and I just came from a very important meeting, and that's related to our announcement today because less than 2 months from now is our 10th anniversary gala.
And we could not be more excited. As some of our listeners probably know, and folks who have been lucky enough to attend our gala for the past 2 years, it is a big, fabulous, decadent taste around gathering at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens in the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, which is just one of my favorite places in the world. It's so beautiful, and we have just the most amazing all-star lineup of chefs, of cocktail makers coming to join us to feed all of our amazing supporters. Our Hall of Famers will be in attendance. As those of you listening probably have heard, we have our amazing 10th anniversary Hall of Fame. So we're honoring food world luminaries who have been working hard to make the world more equitable, sustainable, and delicious. Many of them will be in attendance, and we're really excited for our Hall of Famers, our listeners, our friends, our hosts to all come together and celebrate 10 years of food radio. We are so incredibly excited. So if you're listening and you haven't gotten your tickets yet, now's the time.
Yes.
We have an early bird special going on until October 10th. So there's tickets are discounted from now until then. We have a bunch of different ticket options depending on the type of experience you're looking for. It's going to be a night to remember, and we can't wait to see you there. You can find tickets and more information at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Woo.
Can't wait.
Be there or be square. okay. So Kevin and Miriam, where should we start today? Should we start with cocktails or oysters?
Oh. I always start with cocktails.
All right. So we're going to start with cocktails. Miriam, tell us a little bit about Ruta and kind of the work you do there as master distiller.
Okay, so I work for this amazing small distillery in the Netherlands. It's almost 150 years old. It was founded in 1872.
Wow.
By Simon Rutter, and it's been a family-owned company. I'm the first master distiller from outside the company. And what we make there is gin and Geneva. Not everybody's very aware of what Geneva is, which is very logical because it doesn't really exist yet in the United States. It's around, but very little. It's actually the forerunner for gin. So it all started in the Netherlands, and the Dutch people, they started to distill grain and added juniper berry to it. And the juniper berry, Dutch word for that is Geneva berry. So that's where the word Geneva comes from. And in the end, also the word gin comes from the Dutch word Geneva. And that's what we do. So we get alcohol in, and then we get lots of beautiful botanicals in, juniper berries, but also cinnamon and oranges and grapefruit and a celery and you name it. Anything you can think of. Hundreds of botanicals. And that we make into beautiful recipes and beautiful spirits, so they can be used in cocktails.
I feel like, obviously, gin has been along for a very long time, but for some reason lately, I feel like a lot of people have started to say, gin is my spirit of choice. Have you been noticing that? And if so, like, why do you think that is?
Very much so. I've been 16 years with the Rutte Distillery, and when I came there, we had gin, as we have, like, 80 different products. We've been around for so long, so we have all these old recipes, all these old products. So we had gin, but maybe we sold 50 bottles a year in our own little shop next to the distillery. So it didn't really exist on a bigger scale. And it used to be very popular in the 30s in the Netherlands, in Europe, as a fashion that blew over from the United States back to Europe. But then in late 30s, the crisis came, and then we had a couple of wars. And mm-hmm. So it all finished. And now it's sort of coming back. So the gin disappeared for a long time until, like, yeah, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. It became a hype, especially in Europe, and it grew like crazy. And now it's huge. So we literally took it out of the shop and started making it at a bigger scale again.
That's amazing.
And that's the great thing about the Rutte Distillery is that we have all these old recipes and we have all these products, because in 1.5 centuries you gather anything. So when it comes back into fashion, you can just have a dig in your old recipe books and go again.
Everything that's new, old is new again.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm curious if you could sort of define for our listeners. I don't think that I've actually ever tasted Geneva. Can you describe what sort of flavors you're going to find that are different from gin?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. It is the forerunner, and you can still taste that because the alcohol that we use still has the flavor of grain. Mm. So our alcohol is very malty, grainy, like in whiskey. Whereas gin is made with neutral alcohol. So if you drink a gin, any gin, you will taste, you won't taste the alcohol source really, but you will taste the botanicals only. And in Geneva, you will have botanicals and the source of the alcohol, which is grain. So this grainy, malty flavor is very typical for Geneva.
So tell us a bit about the cocktail that you have here today.
We have here today a Paloma, a twist on the Paloma, because normally a Paloma cocktail is with tequila and grapefruit juice. And we do the Geneva and grapefruit juice. So if you pour the Geneva in your glass, I will show it to you so you can have a taste straight away. It would also be interesting, by the way, to taste it straight in a minute,
sure.
The liquids, because then you really get to learn what it is and what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Get some ice for you. Oh, that's a huge chunk here.
It's awesome how you can hear that on the mic.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
This is the sound of a cocktail being made.
That's why it's great to have cocktails on the radio.
Yeah.
So as Miriam's making this, Kevin, do you want to jump in and talk a bit about Oyster Week?
Sure. It's our 8th year, actually, in a row.
Congratulations.
Consecutively. I started in 2012 as a means by which to celebrate the history.
Oh, we love a pun here.
You do. Everyone does. To celebrate the history, culture, cuisine, economy, and ecology of oysters in the Empire State. So it's not just a New York City thing. Long Island is obviously a part, and it's a highly productive and historic oyster-producing region. And oysters have been consumed upstate and all around the state for a very long time. So it's a celebration of all of those things.
Can you talk a little about, I think it's really great that you mentioned kind of the ecology of oysters in the area as part of kind of the mission statement. For listeners who might not know, what role do oysters play in our New York oceans?
They're here to pair with gin and Genever.
Yeah, this is their sole purpose.
It does make it easier if people are not used to oysters, pair it with a drink and it suddenly is much nicer to start with oysters, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I always say oysters, it's what's before dinner. So try your Rutte Geneva, your Old Simon Geneva drink, and let's think about that with oysters. Does it make you want oysters?
It does, because I think the acidity and the sweetness.
Yeah, and that's compared to, in the Geneva has this maltiness, so it gives a very full, like complex flavor. And at Rutte, we distill like 12 botanicals in this Geneva. It has nuts, it has carob, it has juniper, it has coriander, it has a lot of different botanicals, and they all pair beautifully with the oysters.
Yeah, I think that, like what you mentioned, that maltiness adds sort of like warmth to it, which is really nice with the citrus. It's good.
Exactly. Yeah.
And oysters.
But seriously, to answer your question, I'm really a closet environmentalist, right? So what I really did here was created a platform for which I could deliver an environmental, I hate that word actually, deliver a message about coastal consciousness, a message about habitat, without being on a soapbox. So the whole point of everything that we've ever done with New York Oyster Week is to create a greater understanding and appreciation for where oysters come from, both in those habitats and the people that grow them. This is an incredibly difficult job to have, and these places that oysters are native to and that we grow them in are under extreme pressure, and it's consequential to all of us. So by putting delicious things in people's bellies and Rutte celery gin and Geneva at the same time, people have a great time and they're open to discovery and discovering that message that is really the core rationale mission for New York Oyster Week.
I'm really interested in this mission and the strategy for fulfilling the mission, because I think right now, especially on kind of a national climate discussion, so many people are framing the ways that we can protect the climate by taking away things and by robbing ourselves of like pleasure, of like, you can't eat meat anymore because it's bad for the environment. And I think that this is a really unique way that, exactly what you're doing is you're saying, no, we're going to go eat delicious oysters because they're good for the environment. And can you talk more about why oysters are like a net positive for the...
Yeah, they're the only thing that we can grow in a farmed environment that's ecologically beneficial. They produce biodiversity. A farm where you grow a bunch of spinach, cut down a forest, which was biodiverse, and you plant one crop and you make sure nothing else grows in that space.
Yeah.
That's farming, right? So that's generally a bad idea. Whereas when you farm oysters, you are essentially creating a habitat that supports up to 200 other species of little creepy crawlies and crabs and cephalopods and things you can't pronounce and things you can't see without a microscope. And that supports a food chain above it. So that's why it's such a great food to eat. And, you know, for deliciousness aside, you either have a taste for it or you don't, but the nutritional values are fantastic too. So there's a million reasons to eat oysters beyond the ecological benefits of aquaculture.
Well, whenever you're ready and like have the hands and the capability to start doing some oyster demo with smoking, but also I'm curious about this term marroir, because I think that might be a term most people haven't heard of, and I think that ties in nicely to, you know, yeah. how oysters are beneficial for the water that they're in.
Well, I can't take credit, nor would I, for coining the phrase. A gentleman by the name of John Rowley in Seattle, Washington, came up with the phrase. He's since passed. He was sort of a godfather of the oyster industry. He's a great, great man. I had the pleasure of having oysters with him once in Seattle, which was really, it was fantastic. He came up with the term. It's really to express the flavor influences on an oyster. So much like wine has terroir, oysters have miroir. Miroir is it influences an oyster in different ways than terroir influences a grape. Obviously, you have soil and humidity and moisture and so forth, which creates a profile of a grape. With oysters, you have miroir, which is what tide was it coming in, coming out, what plankton was in the water, what zooplankton was in the water, what algae was in the water, what's the mineral makeup of the bottom, were they grown on the bottom, or were they grown on the top? Where were they grown? What species is it? So there's just this infinite combinations of things that affect the flavor profile of an oyster from literally day to day to day. So it's, you know, just it's endless. And how much you can have fun with that, pairing it with cocktails, is beyond endless as well. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Miroir.
And I guess a question for both of you is, what is it about gin and oysters that go together so beautifully? I think, like, speaking of flavor profiles, there's something that is so complimentary, and each bite of oyster makes you want to take another sip of a gin cocktail.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I think it's the oyster is, of course, salty. It has umami kind of qualities to it. And the gin has as well, because it has botanicals, specifically the Rutter celery gin. That's like the perfect match because it has celery in it, not the stick celery that you have in salads, but we use the leaves, we distill the leaves, and they give a very savory umami kind of feel to the gin. And this particular gin is the perfect match with oysters, as you get the celery and the oyster together in the back of your mouth. So that's why it's such a perfect match.
And as Kevin's starting to fiddle with some oysters here, digging around in the cooler for the perfect ones, Miriam, I want to hear more kind of about, you mentioned that you were the first master distiller from outside of the company.
Yes.
Talk a little bit more about how you came into that role and, you know, you're in a pretty male-dominated industry.
Exactly.
Master distillers,
yeah,
usually men.
Well, what happened is I studied food engineering, and when I finished my studies, I actually specialized in dairy, in cheese. I'm a Dutch girl, so the cheese of industry is very big in the Netherlands, so it was kind of logical for me to specialize in cheese. But when I started working, I got to know the spirit industry, and I thought that was much more interesting. A lot of craft, a lot of secrecy, a lot of nobody wanting to tell you what they were doing, which I thought was fascinating. So then I got to the Rutter distillery after, of course, you know, many years in my career. Then the Rutter family actually called me up and they said, we know you know about Geneva already. We know you're a specialist already. Could you come and help? So I thought, okay, I'll just pop by and have a talk. And then I was in the distillery and I just fell in love with the place and with the people and with the fact that John Rutter was peeling oranges by hand. And with the fact that there was like hundreds of beautiful ingredients standing around, that they do everything natural, no flavors, no colors added, everything's natural. I just fell in love with the place Rutter itself, you know. And then I said to John Rutter, you know, hire me. So he did. And then, sadly enough, he passed away a month later. So I really didn't have any time to be with him and to learn from him, which was a real pity. But it was also a huge challenge. So trying to find out the old Rutter recipes, trying things out, experimenting, and everything was handwritten still. It was really, we're talking 2003 when I came there, but it looked like 1903, wow. Really. So it was really trying to find out about what they did and why. So a lot of testing, a lot of tasting.
Which is where the engineering comes in. You're having to kind of reverse engineer things.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the perfect word.
Yeah,
that's the perfect word. Thank you. And so that's what we did. I mean, then we digitalized all the recipes. And today, 16 years later, we still build on the old recipes. For example, the old Simon Geneva is an old recipe. So we still make that. But the celery gin is a new recipe, but based on old recipes. So everything we do has a connection to our past and to all the botanical knowledge of the Rutter generations before us, mm-hmm. which is very important.
Yeah. as we're talking, you're hearing shucking oysters happening.
That's what it sounds
excellent
like.
Excellent placement by the microphone, by the way.
You like that?
A plus.
Not
A
my
plus.
First time in the studio.
So I'd love to hear, like, with your background in food science and engineering, Miriam, you know, joining the team of a 100-year-old company is amazing. But sort of as someone who clearly has this background in, you know, the engineering side of things, what sort of new perspectives and ideas have you brought to the foray since you joined?
Well, in a distillery, I think it's very much the combination of knowledge and creativity. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge is great, and the knowledge makes you understand why, for example, coriander and juniper are a great match, mm-hmm. because they share a certain molecules that are the same. So when you're really talking about a chemical part of the botanicals, you understand more. But without creativity, you're nowhere, you know. So the knowledge of me as a food engineer, the knowledge of the botanical distillers from the Rutter family before me, and that together with creativity, that's really key. And I don't know, so often people ask me how it is being a woman. I would say I'm not sure. I think men are great in their job as well, and they are great tasters and have good noses and good flavors. But it is very special though, as I'm the first woman in the distillery. And we know from the family we've heard that women weren't even allowed in the production before. And
that,
obviously,
wow.
Now they are.
That's pretty wild. And I was reading a piece, an interview with you that said, you know, often you'll be in the tasting room and guests might walk right by you, not realizing that...
Yeah, all the time.
You're the master distiller.
Like, all the time.
You're the one making the product that they're there to taste.
Yeah.
You basically said, like, it doesn't bother me too much. But, like, you know, I think hopefully we want that to change a little bit. How do you hope that that does shift?
I say that women should have the combination of knowledge and humor. Knowledge helps, you know, when you start talking, people realize that you're knowledgeable and you know things, so that helps. But without humor, you become maybe bitter or frustrated when somebody walks by and it doesn't even say hello. And then when they realize I pay the bills, then they come back. Or when they know that I make the decisions, and then they come back and then they shake my hand. And then I go like, come on, you idiot. But I don't say that, of course. I just laugh at the inside. And you know, so it really helps to try to look at it with humor. So knowledge and humor is the key for to enjoy your job and to, you know, move forward.
Be able to get through it, yeah.
Yeah, and especially in an old place like the Rutter Distillery, it has been very necessary to go about things like that.
Things don't change overnight.
Exactly.
Okay, Kevin, tell us kind of where you are in the process. We have some beautiful oysters that are now shucked open on ice.
Although I murdered these animals, I did it with knowledge and humor.
There you go.
And so
and appreciation.
They're laughing. The oysters laughing. Are laughing.
They're laughing. We have some lovely oysters here from Matt Ketchum, actually. Mm. They're called Peconic Olds. They're from the Peconic Bay, which is the water in between the North Fork and the South Fork of Long Island. And they're just beautiful, briny East Coast oysters. And we have a couple things we can do to them. I have fresh grated wasabi here, and I have some fresh grated horseradish root. We can do that. But first, I think we'll cold smoke them.
Okay.
And then we'll put a couple little accoutrements on them. Oh, you know what else we have? The greatest thing ever. Rutter celery gin pearls.
The moment we've been waiting for. Okay, let's leave it at a teaser. Let's go to a quick break. We're going to smoke these oysters, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to tell you what these beautiful pearls in a jar are all about. Can't wait. We'll be right back.
Since the mid-1800s, before Wisconsin was even recognized as a state, its resident cheesemakers have been putting the art into artisan cheese. When early settlers from Switzerland, Germany, and Italy came to Wisconsin, they brought their cheesemaking expertise with them. They chose Wisconsin because the terroir reminded them of the homes they'd left behind in Northern Europe. The soil and water of Wisconsin is nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin's cheesemakers draw from their rich European heritage and cheesemaking traditions, and combine them with incredible innovation to produce half of the nation's specialty cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers never stop experimenting, trying to improve, and dreaming of your next favorite cheese that has yet to be imagined. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
All right, welcome back to HR and Happy Hour. We're here with Miriam Hendricks of Fruta and Kevin Joseph, the founder of New York Oyster Week. Okay, so we're, as promised, sipping on a bit of the Geneva Strait and tasting what it is like without being in a cocktail. Hannah, thoughts?
I think it's absolutely delicious. There's something, I personally love the flavor of gin straight, but it can be a little bit, like, takes a little more warming up of your mouth to kind of get used to the sharpness of it. I think this is really smooth. Like, I think this is really sippable. Like you mentioned, it's kind of like whiskey, and it has that quality where it's just sort of warm and cozy and sippable, but it also has that amazing, like, all the bright botanicals.
Wow, you're a really good taster. Ah, yeah, you can work for us. Yeah.
Hey, you want a job?
What?
No, because you nail it. You know, you nail it.
You're HR and
thank
Netherlands?
You. Yeah. I love to drink gin. I've practiced. I've been practicing for you.
But gin, as you say, gin is a bit sharper, as it's often also a bit higher in alcohol, and the whole idea is to mix it in a cocktail or with a tonic. And Geneva, you can drink either in a cocktail or a mix or straight. And when you drink it straight, you will notice that it has a beautiful balance, especially this Ritter Geneva, as it has hazelnuts and walnuts, and that makes a very creamy mouthfeel.
I feel like it'd be an excellent martini. You wouldn't have to do, like, anything to it, just like a little rinse of...
Well, the Martinez, it was actually, when the Martinez was one of the first cocktails in the U.S., and at the time, there was no dry gin. It was only Geneva from the Netherlands.
That makes sense.
There you go.
Because it almost is like, it has some of the same qualities that you would have, like, adding vermouth, but you don't necessarily need the extra ingredient.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that.
Okay, so we're moving. We're going to follow you back home. Just drink this all the time.
Welcome.
As you say this, I realized to the behind you, Hannah, there's a massive bar of all kinds of, like, incredibly boutique-y. Crafty things.
Yes.
So we have another show on the network called The Speakeasy that's all about cocktail culture and spirits. Wow. And so they've started to accumulate this
amazing
bar.
Amazing
well,
bar.
Well, on Wednesday night, we're having Shuckeasy, which is oysters and spirits.
Love that.
And Rita Celery Gin is highly featured in that event.
Okay, so yes, tell us about the collaboration and the jar, the magical jar you pulled out.
I think it kind of... It sort of happened serendipitously through mutual friends that Rita became aware of New York Oyster Week, and we pursued it, and we realized what a great pairing the spirit is with really any oyster. And then we started to think about how interesting it was, this history between the United States and Netherlands, or as Miriam says, Netherlands.
Nederland.
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 You can't say Netherlands. We were just talking about it. The Dutch came here in 1624. We're sneaking up on 300 years of Dutch influence in New York City, which is a joke to the Europeans who thought, 300 years. That's nice. That's yesterday.
Yeah, that's cute.
That's cute. Look, there's a country. So we started experimenting with it and talk about it, how we could have fun with it and do different things. And so, here we are. We came up in the process with this what we call spirited pearls. So we'll dress these oysters that we're going to cold smoke here in a minute with the spirited pearls, which is like, you know, overload of glory, happiness. You'll love it very much.
Okay, can you give our listeners a visual of these amazing pearls? Kevin just took this beautiful little jar out, and at first it just sort of looks like it's a clear liquid with some sort of some greenery floating in it, but you look closer and what are we looking at?
We are looking at a process that is equal parts witchcraft, magic, and sorcery.
Perfect.
Whereby we create essentially a spherified spirit and an agent. So the agent in this case is celery leaf, and the spirit is Rita Celery Gin. And through a process I truly can't describe or explain. It's food science. You might be able to do it much better.
He won't.
I don't want to give it away either. I always get the chemicals mixed up. Anybody could figure out. Google spherification easily enough.
Yes.
But what we do is unique in the sense that we take an agent and a spirit, and we pair those in a sphere with oysters. And it's fantastic. It's fun to see happen. The celery inside the sphere when it hits the oyster makes like a snow globe effect. It's over the top. We're the only people in the world that do it. And it became a great way for us to really engage the consumer in looking at the oyster and looking at the spirit and tasting the oyster and the spirit in a way that is different than a cocktail.
Yeah, exactly, because it's beautiful to look at, but when you have it in your mouth, it's also the sensation of the oyster together with the gin. So if you can't make spheres, let's say you can't do it, then it's also nice to just sprinkle a little bit of pure gin on your oyster or eat the oyster and then afterwards sprinkle a little bit of liquid in the shell and then drink it out of the shell. Ooh. So the combination with pure gin is great.
This is giving me ideas for our gala, maybe.
So many ideas.
There is an oyster bar, and last year we had an ice luge for vodka, and I'm thinking maybe we combine those ideas and eat an oyster, and then we pour a little bit of gin in their oyster shells. Yeah, how fun would that be?
We'll leave a bottle behind.
Yeah, it is great, and you will notice how great the pairing is, especially with the rosa celery. As I said, these celery leaves go so well with the flavor of the oyster.
All right, let's give this demo a shot. We were talking about how also it's not the same, but we're bringing back some kind of older trends. We're gonna have a carving station, and what's the other thing we're doing that's kind of old school?
Salad bar.
The first year of our
a porchetta salad bar.
The first year of our gala, the main event was a very, very fancy chocolate fountain, which honestly I feel like if we're gonna bring it back, the 10th anniversary is the time to do it. To just make it as incredibly over the top as possible.
But I was like, what about our aspics or our, as we like to call them in the South, fruit salads, but they're really just Jell-O molds. And this is giving me kind of a Jell-O moldy thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll see. It's not gelatinous. You'll see.
It's more it's like a bubble tea.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. I think it's a similar process.
Or we actually did have something spherified last year too. We had vegan caviar.
Yeah, veggie caviar.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they use
it. You can do that.
Yeah. Okay. Enough chit-chat. Let's get to the oyster
smoking. No gins were injured in the making of these pearls. All right, so the best part about this is you get to use a blowtorch to light the smoker.
I don't even think Dave Arnold ever had a blowtorch in the studio, which is surprising.
Well, the best part about this studio is there's no smoke detector, so as you can see, the globe fills right up.
Matt, can we confirm we don't have a smoke detector? We think.
I mean,
if not,
it seems unlikely.
I thought it was about to find out.
Yeah, we are.
Well, we can kill it right there because that's plenty of smoke. And
spectacular, right?
Oh, it's beautiful.
It smells incredible in here now.
Yeah, that's a combination, I think, of oak and alder. That's a lot of smoke, huh?
Now the plastic glass dome is full of smoke. And so tell us a little bit about cold smoke versus a hot smoke.
I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I made this shit up. I stole it from a bartender. I'm serious. We've seen bartenders, smoking drinks. I said, oh.
Yeah.
I could do that.
A smoked whiskey or something. Or scotch.
I'm smart enough to figure that out.
Heck yeah.
Foams, other things. We've, for our oyster services at our events, we've sort of borrowed from our friends behind the other bar.
Mm-hmm.
So cold smoke is just... really, there's no heat involved there. They're on ice, and so it's passing through this tube into a dome. The oysters are cold. No heat was generated. If you feel the smoke, it's just...
Wow.
Yeah. Now, you wouldn't think that the oysters are going to absorb that smoke in that short a period of time. It's quite shocking how well it absorbs it. So what we'll do now is we'll pearl them.
Okay. Here, let me get a little video
This everyone is can highly see it at Instagrammable. Home. You might want a boomerang. We'll do five.
Yeah.
So we can do different.
We're going to do some video and some boomerang.
So the best part about it, like I say, is when it hits the oyster, how the celery inside spirals.
It is like a snow globe.
Yeah. It's a verb, snow globing. Some are better than others. My man, Emilio Ostra Mayo, made these. He's a magician.
They're really beautiful. They look like marbles almost with the little strands inside.
One more.
Last but not least, here we go. Oh, that was a good one. They're like snowflakes. No two are alike. They don't land the same way. So that's it. You know, you basically just take that oyster and eat it as you would eat any oyster. I recommend sipping the liquor first. Mm-hmm. Speaking of miroir.
Mm. There you go.
Right, so I want to get a sense for where this oyster came from. Also, what's great about pairing spirits, particularly with celery gin and oysters together, is our palates have the ability to discern between the meat of the oyster and the spirit. Mm. So instead of confusing our palates, we sort of delight them. And this, I think, is true of really all spirits or vinegar, which is why mignonettes are made out of vinegar. So we're meaning to be able to receive the brine and the minerality and the other the sweetness at the end of an oyster. We want to receive that. At the same time, we want to sort of delight our palate with something else at the same time. And so this is just the perfect delivery vector, and it's entertaining. But
yeah, we often talk about mouthfeel as well. Like, you know, the oyster is very slippery in your mouth, very soft, whereas the gin is sharper and takes away the softness. So the contrast between the mouthfeel of the oyster and the gin is perfect.
All right, so this is the moment of truth. We're getting our oysters ready.
The question is, can we produce a slurping sound effect?
I think we can manage.
All right.
All right.
All right. Ready? First, we're going to take the oyster. Now, some of your listeners might not really, you know, I get this question all the time. How do I eat an oyster?
Really?
Do I chew it? I'm serious.
Well, let's hear it from the expert.
All the time. Right. So first thing, you treat it like a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. This is essentially a marine grape. So you would sip the liquor as you're sort of smelling it. You could taste the smoke right there.
Ooh, yeah.
Holy smokes. And then you obviously smell it. And then you take the whole thing from the leading edge. You're holding it at the hinge. And you pour it into your mouth. And in this case, you're looking to chew the pearl and pop it and the oyster thoroughly, like 30, 40 chews at the same time.
Okay. Here let's do it.
Thanks for having us.
Mm. I don't know if I chewed it enough, but it's excellent.
The oyster or the pearl?
Both. The combination of the two.
Exactly, the combination.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
Those are very briny oysters. Or at least mine was. I don't know, was yours really salty?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But with the smokiness, was the perfect. That little sip of the liquid was amazing.
There's a lot going on there. I'd almost prefer to just do it without the smoke, actually.
Yeah.
We'll do another one.
All right.
Or let's just sprinkle, like you said, let's sprinkle a little gin on there.
Okay. As we shuck this next round, and then we're going to taste some more, let's go ahead. I'm going to get some trivia started. We always end our show with trivia, and we can take a break between questions if you want to talk more. Okay. But obviously, our trivia this week is oysters.
Okay.
It's oyster specifically.
Am I excluded?
It's not the kind of oyster trivia you might think. Oh. We never make it too literal because that might be too easy. It's more oysters and pop culture. Okay.
Cool.
So question number one, and Nicole, Kevin, please jump in to help if you want. Question number one. In what classic Disney movie do two characters seduce naive baby oysters out from the sea and proceed to eat them?
Wow.
I don't know.
The Dutch lady here is never going to get
Little Mermaid? The Mermaid movie?
No.
I think it's like Alice in Wonderland.
That's right.
Oh, really?
What?
Our intern.
No, I thought that was the Walrus and Carpenter.
Yeah, but that scene is in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nice.
It's pretty twisted. But you never actually see the walrus eating the oysters. It, like, cuts away. He tricks the carpenter and going into the kitchen, and then he comes back and he's eating them all.
Mm.
All right, question number two. What Japanese food film features a romantic scene involving a gangster, a pearl diver, and an oyster?
Could you repeat the question, please?
What Japanese food film features a romantic scene involving a gangster, a pearl diver, and an oyster?
Lost in Translation.
No. It's older than that.
I wouldn't know.
I'll give you a hint. It's
by
more...
pearl diver, do you mean dishwasher? Or is literally?
Literal pearl diver.
This isn't a Tampopo, is it?
It is. It's one
it's
of the vignettes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Tampopo, which is more associated with ramen.
Mm. Yeah, yes. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Question number three. What epic 1960s film includes a scene where the actor Laurence Olivier asks his scene partner, Tony Curtis, whether he prefers snails or oysters?
Oh, wow.
I'll give you a hint. It involves a scene where hundreds of people say they have the same name.
Mm.
Spartacus. Correct. Nicole with Spartacus.
Spartacus.
Oh, nice. All right, question number four. In the 1940s Three Stooges film, Dutiful But Dumb, which of the Three Stooges battles a mischievous oyster hiding in a stew?
Oh, yeah.
It's one out of three.
I remember the scene. I don't remember who it was. Did you have the Three Stooges in Europe? No.
I guess we had it, but I really don't know.
It had Benny Hill, I'll tell you that.
I've always been more of a Marx Brothers girl.
What's it? Mo.
No.
Larry.
No.
Curly.
There you go. You're going to get there eventually. All right, last question. This is a weird one, and I apologize in advance. What former Apprentice contestant starred in his own comedy documentary series and in one dining scene said, well, he was eating an oyster. He said, what's good about this is you suck the oysters up and you always keep some on your face to let the oysters know you're proud of it.
I veto this question.
Exactly. Wow. It couldn't have been Trump because he would never eat something as
No, he
as
only eats
well-done steaks.
Gringo tacos, yeah.
Yeah.
And steaks. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
Well,
we have two abstentions and a European.
The answer is Gary Busey.
Okay.
That guy will eat anything.
Maybe. Maybe. All right.
Is he a verb yet?
He has to be, right?
I mean, if you got Gary Busey'd, yeah, that would mean something.
Okay, well, that question didn't count, so you won trivia.
Yay!
I won?
Yeah.
What?
Everybody won.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's a team. It's a team sport.
I'm just saying,
it's a team
right.
sport. That was our oyster trivia.
Everyone always wins trivia.
Excellent.
No, don't tell them that, Hannah. Okay, so we're going to try one more round of oysters. And we're going to just do them with just the gin. Or just the...
Mm-hmm. Or Jennifer?
Sure.
Cool.
I think we should just... Yeah.
Okay.
I love this idea.
I do too. Do you think we should add a little of the horseradish or just leave it clean Ooh. With the gin? You guys would be experts.
I'd like you guys just to taste okay. that really classic pairing.
Okay.
We could do another one.
We'll eat as many oysters as you would like us to eat. Don't worry.
We're running out.
I like that you bring your oysters around in a Yeti cooler.
Yeti's the best.
You have strong feelings, yeah?
I do because, I mean, I have so many coolers and I rely on these things because I'm either moving, a dozen like this to come to something like this. Or thousands of them to bring them to an event somewhere, and things can't break. So,
yeah.
It's worth the money to me for sure.
So, question about miroir: would you say that it's a quality that is distinctive to oysters because of the way that they exist in the ecosystem, that they carry so much of the flavor of the place, or is that something that you can kind of recognize in other fish or shellfish or crudo?
I think other finfish or mm-hmm. crustaceans, their flavor is more driven by their species.
Mm-hmm.
I could
maybe
stand to be challenged on that, but I actually think...
they say, though, you are what you eat.
Yeah,
and
that right.
counts for every organism, right? I think.
I mean, if you think about it hard enough, you can taste some seaweed in the lobster you're eating, I suppose, but...
Or you can tell a difference between, like, a farmed... salmon and a wild salmon, I
for
would imagine.
Sure, you can
but you
tell
maybe
that.
Couldn't tell like a yeah. salmon that lives like in slightly different locations.
Right.
Wild salmon.
Right, right. Or what
as much.
Year it was harvested.
I wouldn't think so, actually. No.
Interesting.
I wouldn't think so.
So yeah, oysters are special.
Yeah. There's so many
yes,
special things
are.
About oysters. I'm surprised you haven't asked the aphrodisiac question yet.
Are we in love yet?
Well, that was in the Tampopo.
Let's have some more
Tampopo
gin. We'll see
scene.
How it goes. All right, let's sprinkle some gin on those bad boys.
That Tampopo scene is like pretty wild. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it in years and years and years.
The gangster buys an oyster from the diver. And he's like, "Can I buy one?" And then she shucks it for him, and he puts it up to his lips, and he cuts his lip, and then he eats the oyster, and then she like licks the blood off of his lip, and then they start making out. So I guess
wow.
it is an aphrodisiac.
I was going to say.
Do you find that when you go to oyster events, are people falling for each other left and right,
or do they ask that question a lot?
People ask that question all the time, and so we're going to capitalize on this.
Okay.
We're going to create an event in October called O-Date.
O-Date.
So O-Date, October, oyster, There's other words to start with O.
Whatever could
will
they be?
Will be a dating event, a singles event for people that share a love for oysters. So you can come to this event and try different oysters and compare which ones are your favorite, what you prefer, what you don't prefer, what tastes you get in a flavor profile. Mm. So it's great icebreakers in that.
And that's so
fun. Be fun. Yeah,
I love that.
So you will try now. The gin has been sprinkled on top. This is one way to do it. You can also say we do the oyster and then sprinkle some in the shell afterwards and drink it. That's also a nice way to do it.
Thank you. That should be an expression. What do you want, some gin with your oysters? For like when you're being
ungrateful? Or some oysters with your gin.
Okay, yeah, right. See, I think you might be right. I think I like this almost more. Yeah.
There's too much going on with the smoke, and I kind of wanted
it's
to. I know we
it's
have time constraints, so I wanted to.
Yeah.
That was delicious.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think that's a fabulous way to end. To really end this up in the show, let's quickly. Where can people learn more about both Ruta and New York Oyster Week? And then, Kevin, if you want to give us a little bit of an overview of the events coming up.
Well, Ruta is sold here in New York by Empire Merchants. So if you phone them up, they will know exactly where you can get it and how to buy it. And if you're really interested in this particular combination, of course, you have to ask for Ruta Celery Gin.
Mm. Excellent. Website?
Ruta.com.
Great.
What bar or restaurant in New York City offers Ruta, and who sells the most?
We can probably find that online to see where.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll figure that out. New York Oyster Week starts today. It's our 8th annual. We're partnering with the Billion Oyster Project for their party tonight, which is unfortunately and fortunately sold out. It's called Harbor Up. It's a fundraiser for them. So that's the official launch event of New York Oyster Week. And then tomorrow we have Shuck Easy. That's the 18th, and that's at Sweetwater Social. So that's a oyster and spirits or cocktail forward event. Where we'll be pouring lots of Ruta Celery Gin cocktails and actually pairing them with all 5 species of oysters. So this is unusual, something to learn about oysters. There's 5 species that are commonly consumed in the United States, mostly because this is what we can get from the countries we can bring them in from. And very, very, very seldomly do we get all 5 in the same place. And so the hardest one to get is the Olympia. That's the native West Coast oyster from America, West Coast. And my man, Marco Pincho, I have to give him a huge shout out because I called him yesterday at like 3 o'clock at Chelsea Farms in Washington. I said, hey, what are the odds you can get your hands on a couple hundred ollies and send them to me? He said, 100%. I can go right now and put them in UPS. So he's my hero today. We're having Olympia's awesome oyster, Mark Twain's favorite oyster, James Beard's favorite oyster, tiny little things, beautiful. And then we have on the 26th, I'm sorry, the 27th, we have the first anywhere, Mexican Oyster Showcase. Mexico produces great oysters on its Pacific coast, and so we're calling this Ostra Libre, and it's Una Fiesta Grande.
Love it.
So we're going to feature all these great Mexican oysters. And then we have, on the 26th, we have a Hoisters, which just got confirmed last night. So that's a big yacht that we're going to cruise around on and slurp oysters.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. That's good. That's always good.
If I can add something with the drinks, in all these wonderful events, you can try it straight like we just did. But don't forget also the Red Snapper, which is the combination vodka with tomato and Tabasco and some spices. It's tomato, you say here in the United States, sorry. Tomato, celery, oysters, perfect.
Yeah, tomato's always good. That's why you see sometimes oysters and Bloody Marys.
Yep.
Yeah, celery's just such a great flavor with it.
Yeah, but like Bloody Marys are great, but do it with Ruta Celery Gin. The celery is just the link.
Yeah,
really.
Wow. Totally.
Is it true of Bloody Marys as it is with martinis that it's really a gin drink? Because martinis are really a gin drink. This vodkaization is a bastardization of a martini, isn't it?
I'm the master distiller. I know all about the liquids, not so much about the cocktails. I do know about the martini, that it was originally not even gin, but Geneva. I don't know.
I think most things can be improved with gin. That's just me, though.
That's a good, that's
mood.
Very good. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now that everyone's mouth is watering, we're going to eat some more oysters, but I think that's our show.
Website for New York Oyster Week?
www.newyorkoysterweek.com.
All right, so go check it out. Make sure you catch some of these events. Do not miss out on oysters this week. Eat oysters.
Be
They're good for the environment. Be happy. Yes. Okay. Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Kat.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Miriam.
Thanks you guys.
Interns, Kevin and Nicole, and thanks to our engineer, Matt. I'm Kat Johnson.
Happy Oyster Week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This program is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.